Good morning, everybody. This is the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Well, as we get closer to salmon at least partially filling our rivers, we're going to devote at least part of the program to salmon, and we're going to do that in three parts. We're going to have an interview with Bill Smith, the hatchery manager on the McCollumy River hatchery, which is the has the smallest returns of any other hatchery in the Sacramento River system. You know, that including Nimbus, Feather River, and Coleman. Just to show you the efforts that one person is making in the department to try to make a difference. And salmon are at a point where we need more than one person to try to make a difference. You know, we're sitting back here and watching year after year as the Bureau of Reclamation ignores all federal laws, ignores the Endangered Species Act, and kills thousands and thousands of salmon, knowing they're going to do so. I know it sounds incredible, but it's absolutely a fact. Anyway, and then we're going to talk to Mike McHenry. Mike is a kind of a semi-retired commercial fisherman. He's been commercial fishing in the ocean for close to 60 years, 57, for salmon and squid and even anchovies for a couple of years. And he's donated his boat and his time to try a project that he started a few years ago at the Feather River Hatchery. Now they're continuing it in the McCollumy River, where he takes his boat, which is a live bait boat, and they bring a bunch of salmon down, usually about 100,000 at a whack, and put in his boat. Last year there, I think earlier on, they did it at Juisty's. And then they take that boat down and they travel all the way down to the Golden Gate. They take 2 days to do it. The whole while, water from the rivers is circulating through these fish in the tank, at least trying to force some sort of acclimation to the fish so they will be inclined to, you know, they kind of migrate back up by the smell of the water and the drainage, and as incredible as it may seem, and hopefully this will imprint them. And then we'll have an interview with John McManus of the Golden Gate Salmon Association, and they put out a release this week, and it's just it just seems like, I hate to say this, but it seems like the government, I don't care which way you look, just doesn't give a doggone. I mean, everything you do is fighting what the government does. The government knows, and I'm talking about the federal government, the state government. I mean, if I was governor of this state, I would be outraged at what's happening. But I don't, you know, Governor Brown may not even know it. Or he obviously doesn't care about it because he wants to divert water. He doesn't want to provide water for salmon. But anyway, the whole idea is if we don't do something pretty quick, we're not going to have any salmon. And we've gotten dangerously close to that. The Bureau of Reclamation has single-handedly wiped out two-thirds of the winter-run salmon in 2014 and 2015, making the same exact mistake 2 years in a row, refusing to heed warnings about temperatures. They not only cook all the eggs for the winter run, but a complete year class of the fall run. That's why all these salmon restrictions. And they continue to do, they have killed salmon. I grew up on the American River, and we used to go down and watch the salmon spawn. And as a kid, I remember going back over one day, and all of the places I saw salmon spawning the day before were high and dry because the Bureau dropped the water because, guess what? Salmon just weren't of interest to them. And it still continues to this day, and not a single congressional representative does one thing about it. If this was a private sector, they'd all be in jail. Okay. So anyway, what we're just trying to do is let you know what's being done. And it's kind of innovative and it's creative. and where we are. And as much as I hate to deal on the negative, there's a lot of positive in this, and I feel that it's important that you know it. And especially if you care anything about salmon, and if you don't fish for them, if you don't admire that fish, well, there's something wrong with you. That's nature's real work of art there. And then we will, of course, today's is going to be a fishing in the city today at Howe Park. They're going to be planting catfish over there. And it's not a big pond, but it's bigger than you might think. There's plenty of room there. It gets crowded. The Department of Fish and Wildlife will be there. Don Paganelli is involved in that, and he'll join us later on talking about that. And a Delta excursion for striped bass. We will talk a little kokanee fishing up in Stampede Reservoir. It's still going on. They're still going on at Whiskey Town. I haven't heard much of Party this last week, but the week before they were still catching a few fish there. New Malonis and Don Pedro haven't had any kokanee to speak of this year. Gary Coe will join us a little bit later on. They had a great derby down at Shaver Lake. I know that's out of the reach of most Northern Californians. Not really, but there's so many choices between here and there. A lot of us don't go down there. But that lake was drained dry a couple of years ago. And wait till you hear the size of the kokanee that came out of there last week. You will be shocked. And anyway, Gary will give us a little update. Then we're going to talk about salmon fishing in the Feather and salmon fishing upriver, up above Red Bluff, and salmon fishing down in the river by Walnut Grove. And, of course, there's always a few caught around Sacramento, and that will get better as we get more into early October, you know, the mouth of the American, when we get more American river fish in. So we'll also talk about... This just boggles my mind. Shasta Lake and rain. We all know there's big rainbows in there, but boy, they can really be tough to catch. For the last 2 years, mostly down by the dam in that general area and reaching up the Big Backbone, Little Backbone, Dry Creek, and partially up the Sacramento River arm. Down 90 to 110 feet, they've been catching big rainbows, both summers, last year and this year, June, July, August, and now into September. I mean, these rainbows are averaging 18 to 22 inches. My goodness, and it's still going on. So we'll give you details there as well. The east side went through a bit of a drenching this week, muddied up the Carson River and the West Walker. We'll have reports from both those areas. Good news to report that both are very clear, very fishable, and the fishing is excellent. I mean excellent in both those rivers. And the plant that was scheduled for the East Fork and West Fork of the Carson this week all went into the West Fork, and that's mostly in Hope Valley and clear on down to Woodford's. So you got a lot of fish in both rivers there. Anyway, I mentioned Don Paganelli will join us. Rob Reimers will get us up to date on Feather River fishing. Clyde Wands, the old-timer, will join us briefly for stripers. All that coming up in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes on the KFPK Outdoor Show. Thanks for being here.
Look how much happens every day in the news now. It's like the world is moving at 90 miles per hour.
You need a radio station that helps you keep up to speed.
Objective coverage and analysis every time you listen. News Radio KFBK 93.1 FM at 1530 AM.
Subject prior to sale, $39.99 total due from customer. At lease inception includes $4,000 Lexus lease cash for qualified customers. Zero security deposit, 36-month term on approved credit, 10,000 annual miles, 25 cents a mile over. Stock number R36378, see dealer for details. Instant 217.
Here, Roseville, think Lexus. And picture yourself driving in the elegant confines of a new 2017 ES350 from Lexus of Roseville. You can lease this premium sedan now for just $329 a month. Experience amazing with the new ES350 from Lexus of Roseville in the Roseville Auto Mall.
Are you like me? Do you want a doctor who's not only highly trained in conventional medicine, but also educated in evidence-based natural therapies? A doctor who will spend the time to figure out what's actually going on and help you really get your health back, rather than just writing a prescription for a quick fix? Call my doctor, Dr. Dennis Godbee, at the Sacramento Naturopathic Medical Center. Your health and vitality is so worth it. Write this number down, 916-446-2591. That's 916-446-2591 or online at sac-nd.com.
Business can't stand sitting still. Business needs action, decisions, maybe a new space. At Bank of the West, our go-to bankers get it. We're offering a 2.99% variable rate on owner-occupied commercial real estate loans up to $2.5 million. Come in or go to bankofthewest.com/business offers. See how good things happen when your local bank goes big. Bank of the West, the bank for a changing world. Limited time offer ends October 20th. Loan subject to credit approval. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Here's what real people said after tasting Smashburger's new Triple Double.
This is a lot of meat.
Well, it tastes those three cheeses in there.
This is really juicy, man.
Meatiest thing I've ever eaten.
For $4, you get triple the cheese and double the beef in every bite. Try Smashburger's new Triple Double for only $4. And see why everyone's calling it the juiciest, beefiest, cheesiest burger you'll ever have.
This is my new favorite burger.
Smashburger, the new way to burger.
Available for a limited time, only at participating locations.
Shopping for replacement windows but don't have the foggiest clue where to start, what to ask, or even who to trust? Hi, Kitty O'Neill here. Find out what every homeowner should know before buying replacement windows at howtobuyawindow.com. Which windows last and which are guaranteed to warp, peel, and blister. It's all inside Hall's free window buyer's guide online at howtobuyawindow.com. Now, I chose Hall's because they've got a great reputation for customer service, and I just love our windows. They really add such a beautiful element to the home. You can get Hall's free window buyer's guide and find out what to expect before you start replacing your windows. Now, to schedule a free, no pressure, highly educational consultation, or to download your free window buying guide, just head to howtobuyawindow.com, or you can give them a call, 916-248-5158. Again, 916-248-5158. Shopping for replacement windows, check Hall's Window Center.
This is Kitty O'Neill, and Lexus of Sacramento is the only place I have my Lexus serviced. Open weekday mornings at 7:30. I trust my Lexus only to the service center at Lexus of Sacramento. Online appointments at lexusofsacramento.com.
Our sold-out 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival, hosted by Ryan Seacrest.
iHeartRadio.
Two nights, one stage.
Let's go!
This weekend at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas.
Watch it live on CWTV.com or the CW app, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. And for the first time ever, watch our Daytime Village, 11 a.m. Saturday.
Capital One is the proud marquee partner of the iHeartRadio Music Festival. For more information on Capital One products and services, please visit CapitalOne.com today.
Well, every year after that, School of Stripers comes in early August. And, of course, Decker Island seems to be the center of attention there. But this year, I mean, they were over on the San Joaquin. They got up into the Sacramento River a little bit, and up by Liberty Island, down by Broad Slough, on the San Joaquin. I said that. But it was pretty good there for about 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden, it started tapering off. And these fish kind of disappeared, and not a whole lot of new fish moved in. These fish are pretty transient anyway. I mean, you can go out fishing one day, they're there. The next day, they're gone. You got to go find them. Then 2 days, they may be back in the same place. Well, anyway, this year, there seems to be, this is a low spot we normally go through, and this is when we start waiting for fresh fish to come in. And it's hard to get in the lower portions of the Delta because of the wind. And a guy that has experienced all that this week, of course, is Barry Canavero. And he joins us now. Hi, Barry.
Good morning, Bob.
So what's your gut feeling, Barry? This is an unusual happening for mid-September. But usually it's followed up by little indications of newer fish movement in lower in the system. Any sign of that happening yet?
Well, you know, it's windy down there that most people aren't out there fishing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty much normal. I've been all over the place. We're finding fish here and there. Not any big schools of fish. When we do find them, 90% of the time I can't get them to go.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, to me, this is pretty normal. This is September. You know, it used to be after the Rio Vista Bass Derby, that's when the season starts. You know, yes, you got these early fish in August at Decker Island. That's been happening for years. But, you know, do they go up or do they go back down is the question. You know, I always think that probably they go back down because all of a sudden they come back up.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Of course, not all of them do the same thing.
No, they don't. I mean, a lot of them stayed here all year long.
Yeah.
But, you know, the water temperature is just starting to come down. The days are starting to cool off a little bit. I mean, it's almost nice to go out now because, you know, high of 80, 85 is nice, you know, compared to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not been bothered too much by the wind up above Rio Vista. I have not been down below at all.
You don't want to go down there because it's too windy.
I know. The other morning I called Clyde on my way out. I said, well, are you going up or are you going down? Of course, he didn't know he was talking to me, but he said, yeah, I'm going down. I said, okay, it's going to be windy. I'm going up. So then he calls me on the phone. He says, my God, it's windy down here. But anyhow, we've been covering a lot of water up above, a lot of area that, you know, they, you know, Liberty Island, there's fish there. I think you almost need to be in like a bass boat or a boat with electric motor and work the brakes. I got lucky and found some up in Shag Slough, but then I went back up there again and I found them, but I couldn't get them to go. And I just couldn't stay there long enough for the tide to make a difference.
Yeah.
So I
went for a run. Funny how they get so particular like that.
Yeah. I went for a run and I went all the way up to in through Minor. I went up the Deepwater Channel. I did not see anything that would make me stay. So I went up Minor. And we went all the way through Minor and through Sutter and then down Steamboat. We got a couple of fish in Minor from the marina to the bridge, from Arrowhead to the bridge.
Okay.
That area there.
That's always seems to be a good early season spot for some reason.
Yeah. But you know where the power lines are and the granary is?
Yeah.
It's usually pretty good. I didn't even mark a fish there.
Huh.
So
that's another place that seems to hold fish almost all the time.
I was telling my customers, I said, you know, an old-timer, Bob King, who probably taught me more about the Sacramento River than anybody could ever do, because, I mean, he was just really good at it. And he used to take me, and we're talking 35, 40 years ago, he used to take me up to Minor Slough, and we would bait fish, because he didn't believe too much in trolling. And honestly, we could sit there and catch stripers this time of the year, but mostly in October, and the salmon would be coming through and banging into your boat. There would be so many. And that's, you know, your program today is going to really tell the truth about salmon fishing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not there. We don't have the numbers that, but, you know, I'm sure you remember things like that, especially in Minor. Minor was one of the ones that, you know, but he told me, he said, you can only fish on the outgo, but the tide's always outgo. On the income, it slows down.
Yeah.
So then I learned that I could go across from his spot on the outgo, and I could go to a new spot on the income and actually catch fish. He couldn't believe it. He said, that couldn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I've been fishing Minor. I always loved Minor Slough. And, you know, I was there as a kid, went with a neighbor right across that granary. That was a floating bridge there.
Right.
And we went out onto that, I guess it was Little Prospect Island. Is that what it is? And anyway, and pheasant hunting there. You know, we had permission. And then a friend of mine and I went in and bought this, I don't know what kind of material it was. It was kind of a fiberglass, I think, you know, 12-foot car top boat We used to haul that up and down the levee with our 5.5 horsepower Johnson outboard to fish Minor Slough.
Yeah. Well, my one good thing about Minor, it does go mostly all in one direction as it going out,
yeah.
You know. And it is protected from the wind. Now, I was there whatever day was fairly windy. But the wind never bothered us all day long. I mean, the water was flat every place until we got the steamboat and getting back down, you know, towards Snug Harbor. The wind really started to come up there. But nothing like it did down below, though. But, I mean, I like Minor. I like that first sandbar that you get in there, and then I like the first turn for bait. I couldn't tell you how many fish we've caught there. And it's just a nice place to go. And if there's not too many boats coming out of Arrowhead, it's even nicer because they don't wake you all over the place.
Well, the boats do put the fish down in Minor Slough. I mean, it doesn't take many boats to put them down. I know that.
But it's a nice place to go.
Sure.
And during a week, you can usually. It's a good place to get away if you like to bait fish. It's an excellent place, and I did not have a grass problem in there. Or a hyacinth problem in there. Now, last year it was terrible, but this year, so far, no problem. We did not have any problems with grass or hyacinth or that moss that's on the top of the water. We didn't have any of that problem at all. We trolled that whole distance from the mouth of Minor all the way up through Sutter, down.
Wow.
And no problem at all. And most of the water was 70 degrees.
Hmm.
And we did run in Shag Slough, it was 75. But other than that, the water temperatures are coming down. So,
well, it takes a few days with these cooler temperatures. That's a lot of water to cool down. And
oh, yeah.
It takes a while. It's just going to be very gradual. But my goodness, if it cool to half a temperature a day, that would be a time to rejoice. Think of what we'd have in a week, 3.5 degrees. My goodness, that would make a big difference in both stripers and salmon, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I think this week here is going to be a little bit cooler. I mean, you know, I think everything's going to start happening. We have not bait fished yet, but we're getting ready. Myself, I love to bullhead fish.
Oh, by the way, we have bullheads this year, you told me the other day.
Yeah, we have bullheads. We have grass shrimp even.
Where'd they come from all of a sudden?
A normal water year.
Oh, I see. There you go.
The bay got flushed out
like
it should be every year. Just think, enjoy it, because if they ever put the tunnels in, you'll never see that again.
Yeah.
But I'm ready to start. I love the shallow water fish, the 2 and 3 foot water with live bullheads. I'm ready to start that, and we probably, by the Rio Vista Derby, will be doing things like that. I did talk to somebody in Montezuma that knows it very well. Matter of fact, I taught him half of it. But he's been fishing it after work and stuff at night and stuff. He tells me, he says, loaded with sturgeon, and he's getting a few of them down at the mouth.
Okay.
But he said stripers, he said they're... If you're fishing bait, they'll eat you alive, but you got to catch 20 to get a keeper.
Yeah.
So
Barry, at least there's promise on the horizon. Thanks for the update.
Definitely.
Obviously, we're at the bottom of the hour. I'll talk to you next week. Good luck this week.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Barry Canavero, book a trip, 916-777-6498. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that water temperature and find out what's going up in the Klamath Basin. Don't go away. Welcome back. Well, you know, there's, as we say every year, there's just so much to say about water temperature when it comes to certain species of fish. Now, stripers... you know, they have their preferences, too, but, you know, they make the exception. They sometimes will bite in really cold water or really warm water. Salmon, on the other hand, are very reluctant to bite in the warmer water. But, you know, there's a brief window for whatever reason, if you have a school of fish going through, and a salmon just feels a little aggressive and your lure is there, he's going to bite it. But it's not going to be that often. That's why, you know, a school goes through and you'll see 25 boats out there catch three or four fish. Well, if the water was 10 degrees cooler, you'd see 25 boats catch 10 or 15 fish. You know, that's the difference in water temperature. And think of what we have been through this summer and up until just recently with highs above 95 all the time. We set a record. Not a single high in August was under 90 degrees. And what was, and let alone all the 100 degrees days. And then what was really bad is most of the nighttime temperatures didn't drop below 70. If they did, they had a little delta breeze or something. It would get down into mid-60s. But now, just in 1 week, look what we're doing. We have a high over the next three or four days of 84 today, then 87, 82, 78, 78. But here's the key. The nighttime temperatures, 60, 59, 54, 57, 52. And now that's just through Wednesday. Now, when Wednesday comes and goes, you're going to, if you know anybody on that river or you're on that river, and the water temperature now is, you know, 69 degrees to 70 degrees, say, down in Walnut Grove, and at the mouth of the American, maybe 69, 68, you're going to see a difference of several degrees. And then you're going to notice that just a few more salmon are being caught. So that temperature means an awful lot, especially to salmon. So... Well, we haven't heard much from Darren Rowe because, first of all, almost the entire month of August, the whole state of Oregon was covered in smoke. I mean, it just devastated the tourist industry. You know, you go to Oregon for a variety of things. You know, you go up in the Bend District to play golf, and then on Century Drive up to fish and all those lakes and streams. You know, the Deschutes River, Prairie Prairie, Wickiup, all those lakes. Then you go, you know, into Klamath Basin itself. Klamath Lake is a great, great place for big trout in August. You know, they all move into the spring areas. Crater Lake, smoke everywhere. Just devastated it. However, it's better now. And I talked to Darren Rowe of Rowe Outfitters last night. Darren, since this is a year that seems to be run later than every other year just because of the type of winter we had and all the water, I have to ask you about Klamath Lake. Usually at the end of August, the fish move out of the rocky point in the cold water and back into the lake. Has that happened yet?
You know, no, they're still in that rocky point area. But, you know, our weather's cooling off really quick, so that they could leave any day. But I will tell you, the size of the fish are really up.
Now, let's explain before you go any further. These are wild rainbows in Klamath Lake. And so back to Rocky Point and bigger than ever.
I guess when I say larger fish, they're averaging, you know, between that 8 and 12 pound level for the bigger fish, which is I know that seems unheard of, but but there's a lot of them. I mean, I know of close to 32, 33 fish over 10 pounds this year and up to 15.
Unbelievable.
In that area, just that spot itself.
Of course, that's a magic spot in that whole lake anyway. So
it
how
is.
Are they catching them?
You know, all right, so us poor fly guys don't like to hear this, but guys are throwing a bass lure like a jerk bait, those rubber bass lures, and they're smacking them. You know, they probably gut shoot me for telling, but nobody's going to go out there and fish like they do and work it as hard as these guys that are putting up the numbers are fishing, especially when it's the last hour of daylight.
Well, the last hour of daylight, huh? Are they late? You know, usually the best fishing in August is in the weed beds across from Walk and then down. Are they fishing the weeds?
You know, they're not, because they're out there, or they're waiting until they see fish start blowing up minnows, and then they go and they throw these stupid things right at the, and they only throw to the big boils.
I'll be doggone. Well, you know, there's articulated flies too, you know. Of course, you need you need a spay rod to do that.
I know, for those great big flies.
Yeah.
Guys, I mean, they're throwing like a 6-inch bait.
So my Denny Rickards seal bugger isn't going to be noticed.
Well, I think you're gonna catch fish on it, but these guys are just targeting big fish. So if that's your MO, that's how you want to do it.
Oh my. Okay. If that's that good, how's the Williamson River fishing?
I fished it on Monday personally, not just my guides, but and I had, you know, 30 plus fish day. I don't know if I was in the mid 30s or high 30s, but we caught a lot of fish over 22 to 26 inches. When I say a lot, I mean probably a dozen of those fish were in that size class.
All rainbows?
All rainbows and all on size 18 chironomids, midge patterns.
Under an indicator?
Under an indicator.
Amazing. 24 to 28 inch trout on a size 18 midge.
You
got to lose a few fish.
Oh, we lost a lot of fish. We missed so many bites. I mean, we had bites every other cast.
Amazing. Okay. I know before we started this, you told me you went to the Rogue on Tuesday. What happened there for steelhead?
You know, we did decent, and we didn't land any big fish. We broke one off in that 8-9 pound range. Poor guys were from Louisiana, and they'd never fished for steelhead and didn't expect, you know, a fish to pull that hard.
Uh-huh.
But we landed 6, we hooked 8, and then we caught another half a dozen half pounders, you know, those 14 to 18
How big
fish.
Were the fish you landed aside from the half pounders?
About 22 to 26 inches.
Same as a trout almost, huh?
Yeah, I know.
But you're talking what? You're talking 3 to 6 pounds there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a slouch. I mean, they're great fish.
And what'd you catch them on? a pink worm.
Oh, my gosh. It's pink floss. So you can't use a rubber worm, but we were tying pink floss patterns and fishing them under an indicator, and they're smacking them.
Darren Rowe of Rowe Outfitters, he kids off the air. You know, when they first started using these pink rubber worms, I guess you can't use those on the Rogue. I just found that out last night when he said that. But he kind of kids. I lost all respect for steelhead when they started hitting these big pink rubber worms. And then he said, I lost more respect for them when they started hitting this goofy big pink floss under an indicator. But you know what? What does it look like to a steelhead? Eggs. It just... either a color, a shape, something, you know, what is it? I mean, you got to realize that fish are going to look at these things a little different, interpret them a little different than we are. We kind of overthink it a little bit. But if that's what's catching them, never mind why. Get some pink floss and fish it under an indicator. I bet that would work a little bit later on in America or feather or else. Who knows? Anyway, Darren's number 541-884-3825. And of course, not only is he an outfitter, but they've got the Crater Lake Zip Line, which I went on last year in October, and what an experience. And you can get more of a feel of that by going to craterlakezipline.com. After the break, Mr. Dan Bacher, stay with us. Welcome back. Kind of hoping that Dan Bacher would call in, but he hasn't so far. So he's probably getting that extra few minutes of snooze time. So instead, what we're going to do, and all of you salmon fishermen heading down to the Delta or striper fishermen, pay attention. I talked to Jim Fernandez at Fisherman's Friend, who got out and did a little salmon fishing and told of his experiences there, and also of some guys that came in their shop, their experiences trying to get through the stripers to get to the black bass over on the San Joaquin side. Jim, things are picking up a little bit for salmon. You got out this week. Where'd you go, first of all?
Well, I targeted the Walnut Grove area. I wanted to kind of get out and give the boat a little shakedown from having been using it out in the ocean, so I wanted to give it a freshwater shakedown.
Sure.
I forgot some of the stuff like rod holders and things like that.
So yeah, no big deal.
nothing that's really important. We went to Walnut Grove. We fished it on Tuesday. We picked up one nice striper, nice male. Saw a few other ones caught. And then went back yesterday and same area targeted. Watched one of the guys, regulars that comes in the shop, picked up three nice fish. The biggest was 22 pounds. And the rest of us that were all out there was probably 15 or 20 boats. We just all were watching him catch fish.
Yeah. Now, just a second ago, you said you got one male striper. Did you mean salmon?
Oh, striper. I meant salmon.
Oh, okay. So you did get one. And you were using what, a Silvertron spinner?
Silvertron spinner, yeah. We were using, Tuesday we were using inline weights, and yesterday we were using both inline and spreaders to try. And I don't know what, you know, we had stinko on something yesterday because the fish just weren't there. But there's enough guys out there that those fish were getting everything thrown at them. And at one point in time, there were so many boats in the downtown area there at Walnut Grove that I think that if a fish tried to come through, something should have got snagged. but you know, it's that's salmon fishing this time
of
year.
Sure. And what was the water temperature? Do you happen to recall?
Yeah, on Tuesday, warm water. I mean, 70, a little over 70.9, I think is what we had Tuesday. And then yesterday with that cloud cover, it dropped down to a chilly 69 degrees.
That's not exactly salmon water, is it?
No. And I actually saw one guy on Tuesday. I wanted to say something to the poor fellow, but he was so excited. He was actually had his fish over the side and was dragging it, and I thought, God, that fish is going to be poached, you know, by the time he gets done. But no sea lions or anything in that area. We haven't had any problems like I've heard up in the Sacramento area, but it's still early, Bob.
Sure, it is. It is. And by all indications, it seems to be just a little late for the salmon because they stayed in the ocean an awful long time, and just now is it starting to slow down a little bit in the ocean?
Well, I know we've got some guys that are going out there, and that's what they're saying. They're saying, hey, gee, the fish is just really dropping off. So,
mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, Bob, like you and I have talked about before, these fish with this warm water, they're just not going to stick around. If you're going to get fish, you got to be there when that bite window, which is probably maybe 30, 40 minutes tops, and those fish are moving through.
Yeah.
And they've got something else on their mind. They're looking for cold water.
Yeah. What about stripers? I know the trolling bite has slowed down, but I'm hearing, I think, a little bit more about people catching them on lures and swim baits, especially on the San Joaquin side.
The San Joaquin side, and clear over to Mildred, over in that area, anywhere in that southwest delta area, guys are picking them up on swim baits, and a lot of the bass fishermen are trying to target, you know, the black bass using the soft swim baits, and they can't get through the stripers to get to the bass. And they're catching anything from, you know, 12 inches, 14 inches up to double-digit fish.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and they're, I mean, a guy in their date, he goes, is there anything I can do to get through the stripers? He goes, I mean, I said, that's the kind of problem you like to have. But he goes, not when you're in a bass tournament. He says, it sure isn't, you know.
Well, what's he using? Just a simple paddle tail nondescript swim bait?
Yep, that's all they're using with a jig head and just trying to get it up in there and work those little cuts through the tules where the water's coming through, going after the bass that are moving up inside on the structure. and the stripers are just tearing them up.
Of course, Bobby Barrick's been making a living at that for years and years, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. He's got that down to a. He's got it down.
That and the surface plugging. So
you know what else we saw, Bob, on Tuesday morning? A lot of shad first light were jumping, and we watched probably seven or eight stripers on the old sack right below Walnut Grove and Coquettes running the shad up onto the bank. We literally saw stripers that were breaking out of the water up onto the bank chasing shad.
Isn't that something?
And just sat there and just were laughing, and I said, well, do you want to try for some stripers? And we probably should have. We would have had more luck. But just amazing. You know, you get out there in that delta early in the morning, and you just see so much. There's so much activity out there. If you just kind of look around and get past looking the end of that rod, you see a lot of things going on.
That's Jim Fernandez, fisherman's friend. That is something to see. Now, don't get your hopes up here. You could go trolling for those fish down below Coquette, probably not have any luck. But if you had a little 3/8 to half-ounce Castmaster you could throw in there, that'd be a different story. I'll find out how big those fish are. Anyway, Jim's number 209-369-0204. By the way, Thursday at 7 o'clock at Fisherman's Friend Chris Ditter of Head Rush Sport Fishing is going to be giving a salmon seminar. In fact, Chris is also giving one today down at Bass Pro Shops in Manteca at 3 o'clock. And here's a guy that does an innovative approach to salmon fishing with new techniques. And if you want to improve your techniques, go to Bass Pro today, or especially Fisherman's Friend this coming Thursday at 7 o'clock in Lodi, where refreshments will be served, okay? After the break, well, of course, we will have tons more. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the second hour of the KFBK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thanks for being here. Saturdays 5 to 8 on KFBK, 1530 AM and 93.1 FM. Salmon fishing is picking up, and striper fishing is kind of, what's going on here? Where are all the fish? And in the middle of all that is a Fishing in the City program, and it's at Howe Park. And guess who's here to tell us about it? Don Paganelli. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Bob.
So we're back to Howe Park. We've mentioned before that it gets crowded. It's a small park. But, you know, that pond itself, when you look at it, that's not exactly a dinky little pond either.
No, but we get an awful lot of people that come out to this event.
Probably just so, look where it's located. I mean, surrounded by homes.
Well, and that's part of the program, and that's what we like to see.
Yeah,
is all those people coming out to try their luck, get their kids involved, and have fun in the outdoors.
And we have to mention, while this is great for kids and parents that don't have the means to take them fishing or the knowledge, it's not just for kids. It's just if you're 16 years of older, you need a fishing license.
That's right. All the same rules apply.
Yeah.
And we'd like to see all families come out. We get a lot of single parents that don't have the knowledge to take their kids out fishing, but their kids want to go out and experience it. And this is a good time to do that. Even if you're just coming out for the first time and you want to see what it's like, maybe get involved with it. This is a great way to experience, getting out and going fishing for the first time. So it gives them kind of a little taste of what it might be like. We get a lot of people that come out like that.
Well, plus you guys are there to, I mean, somebody that's never fished anymore and wants to take their kids out or fish themselves. Well, how do I tie this on? Well, how do I cast? Well, you guys are there to help with all that.
Yeah, we have some rods set up with the casting plugs on them. We take them over to the side. We show them how to cast. And, if they want to learn certain knots, we show them how to tie a knot. We talk to them about, we put in a little class, a little half an hour class ahead of time, and give them a little education on fishing ethics, safety, the environment, you know, water and how water affects everything. We're not just the fish, but you know, the pollution and everything else. Get just a short education on you know, being out there in the wild and experiencing all this, and then you know we pass out rods and bait and then we show them how to cast and tell them that you know you're catfishing today, so it's all about patience and waiting, and it's not throwing it out and reeling it in and throwing it out and reeling it in, and just you know little things on fishing itself, and hope that they have a good time and catch a fish.
Yeah. So this is all catfish, and there's some pretty good sized catfish. What, up to like 2.5 pounds?
Yeah, and they've got some bigger ones in there. I'd say the average fish is probably a couple pounds.
Wow.
And then they've got up to 4 and 5 pounders in there that they throw in. So it's kind of a mix.
I mean, those fish fight all by themselves. I mean, they're not a bad fighting fish at all.
Oh, no. No, and we tell them how to handle them. That's one of the other things we do in the class is we show them, you know, the catfish are, they're slow moving, but they're very strong. And how to hold them and how to be aware of that, those three fins, the dorsal fin on top and those two pectoral fins that stick out by their cheeks that have the spines on them. And, you know, we try to give them a little education so they don't just reach down and grab that thing and get stuck.
And let me tell you, every kid I know and I grew up with, we all have a few scars from catfish. Learning the hard way, you know. Let's see, tickle the belly so he'll just kind of stay still while you grab him. And the whole thing. So that all starts at what, 8 o'clock, 8:30 this morning?
8:30 we have the class. We have sign-ups ahead of time for people that are coming up to we have a sign-in sheet, so they put down how many rods they want to borrow.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end of the class, we start calling off all the names of the people that are signed up for a rod and passing out the rods and the bait.
Good.
And if they need one of us to come down and show them, we'll show them.
Okay, good deal. And Howe Park is on, what is it, Hurley and?
Cottage and Bell.
Cottage and Bell in Sacramento. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I understand you went down the Delta trying to back up by Liberty Island trying to find these elusive stripers.
We did. It was more of an investigative trip. I was trying to find out. I kept hearing reports on and off. Nothing like the report I heard earlier from Fisherman's Friend there, but that was on the San Joaquin side. So we were looking up there at Liberty Island, and we didn't find any schools of fish at all, any numbers. We had some short stripers that we caught. We probably caught more black bass throwing those big swim baits than we caught stripers.
Really?
They just weren't in there. I mean, we had a good tide in the morning. We got there at dark 30, and we worked the tide. We jumped around trying different spots to see if they were, you know, around. And, I mean, as soon as that tide quit, you couldn't find a boat out there. I mean, it was like a ghost town, which is very unusual for that area. Usually if there's stripers in the area, people will stay around and work the area until that tide change happens again. But, boy, I tell you, it just, everybody just evacuated the place by.
So
by
you had what, slack water?
Yeah, it just kind of dropped out and we just kind of hunted around and called it a day about 12:30, 1 o'clock. Because there just wasn't anything around.
How big were the black bass?
We had one that was probably 3.5-4 pounds.
That's not bad.
The rest of them were, you know, were small fish, and we're catching them on these, you know, 8-inch swim baits that we're throwing. So some of the fish were almost as big as a swim bait.
Wow. So that it's just a matter of time before more fish move in there. I mean, it's only mid.
Well, I think the water's too warm.
Yeah,
it was in the 70s.
Yeah,
I know that there's guys catching them in the main channel, spooning up in the deep water channel and stuff like that. But those fish are deeper and they're in that cooler water. I think that when this water starts to cool down, I think that you'll see a lot more fish moving up in there.
Yeah, well, I tell you one thing. By the end of this week, we should have those conditions.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, we need a little fall turnover coming on.
Yeah. Yeah. You can feel it already.
Yep. Yep. So. I'm going to be doing a fall seminar at Fisherman's Warehouse on the 28th. I'll be doing a bass fishing seminar on fall.
So that's a Thursday night.
Yes.
At Fisherman's Warehouse on Folsom Boulevard.
Yep.
And 7 o'clock?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Okay. What do you think of the time 6 o'clock versus 7 o'clock? How, what, is there a difference in the crowds?
No, not really. We've usually had some pretty good crowds by 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the seminar that you're giving. My striper seminars are usually standing room only, and then some of the other seminars are a little smaller. I think it just depends on the
seminar.
What's
this one going to be?
This is fall bass fishing for black bass.
Okay.
For the fall bite.
All right. Thank you, Don. We'll check with you next week, see what's happening out there.
Thanks, Bob. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Don Paganelli. You want to book a trip with Don? 916-502-3474. After the break, the legend, Scott Laceff. USA.com. Scott Laceff. Look forward to that every Saturday morning. Good morning, Scott. What are we cooking today?
Good morning. I'm cooking chili Colorado today.
All right. Let's have it.
Were we supposed to cook something else? Did you tell me I was I supposed to be doing something else?
Well, we talked about maybe doing a you know, like salmon steaks and stuff.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But that's going to be more, that'll be more appropriate next week anyway.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Well, I mean, the weather's cooling down. The water's cooling down.
I forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, it's an age
chili
thing.
Chili Colorado. You know those, you know those dried red peppers that you see hanging up in the Hispanic section of your grocery store?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with them?
Watch other people buy them.
You just keep on walking, don't
I
you?
I just keep on walking.
They give a great depth of flavor. That's what makes the Colorado, the red chili, that's what makes it red, is these, like, New Mexico dried chilies. And all you got to do, you grab a bag of them, you crack them open, pull all the seeds out, take the stems off, put them in hot water for about 30 minutes. Then you run them through a food processor or a blender, and you have this, with just a little bit of liquid in there, and you have this really intense red chili flavor, and it's got some smokiness to it, and that is kind of the basis for making the chili Colorado. You start with a little hot oil, throw in a couple of cups of, I don't care if it's duck or goose or deer or whatever, you're going to just brown those cubes, throw in some onion, some Anaheim peppers, some garlic, let that simmer for a few minutes, then add some diced tomato, a little oregano, cinnamon, 2 cups of beef broth. You want to give it, that's where the body of it's going to come from, the liquid's going to come from.
From the beef, beef broth?
Beef broth or beef stock.
Can you use something other than, can you use something other than beef?
Sure, chicken.
Chicken will work, okay.
Broth. Okay. Venison broth, sure.
Okay.
And then you take those rehydrated pureed peppers that you have, throw them in there, let it simmer for a couple hours, and I'm telling you, it's so good and so simple, and you're going to see so much more flavor with that, those pureed, formerly dried chilies. Season it with salt and pepper and hot sauce. You can serve it in a bowl with flour tortillas, top it with cheese, and it doesn't really matter what game or what meat that you make it with. It's going to all taste really, really good.
People that know how to cook with chilies really add an element that they just don't taste like chili peppers, you know?
No, and it doesn't just give you screaming heat, because I'm not a screaming heat kind of guy.
Me neither.
It's really, really mild.
Yeah.
But it gives you a very intense, deep flavor.
So on the website, this is under Chili Colorado?
Chili Colorado. I also have another version on the Ducks Unlimited website. We've been shooting segments for the Ducks Unlimited. So, you know, I write for the Ducks Unlimited magazine,
yeah,
and have for the last 10 years, mm-hmm, and we're now doing video versions to accompany the magazine versions of the
beautiful, beautiful.
That's how I've spent my week.
Man of many talents.
Heading to Philadelphia next week to feed some homeless folks, and then I'll be back.
See you then.
Talk to you.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Laceth, thesportingchef.com. Well, we told you we do some things on salmon. I talked to Bill Smith, who's a hatchery manager down at the McCollumy River Hatchery. And Bill is a guy that's trying to figure out a way to get a few salmon here, a few more salmon there in light of what we're facing. Listen to this. Bill, you got your work cut out for you on the McCollumy River Hatchery, getting enough salmon and steelhead up there. And the last few years, we've had some success stories there. But you have to do a lot of experimenting with a variety of things just because of water flows and water management problems and where you release the fish. But you've done enough work where you get some good indications. Tell me what's going on now. What are you looking forward to as far as salmon returns?
Well, it'll be nice if you're having some water in the fall. We should get plenty of fish back to the river. We should have enough water to do some releases in the spring to help our natural production get out. We've done some alteration to our release strategies. We've gone to 100% net tens. We release no more than 2 days in a row. We're doing morning releases at the start of the ebb tide.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Evening releases at the start of the ebb tide.
You've refined everything.
We've refined everything. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
we've been doing some experimental work with different feed supplements to help the fish through the smoltification process to get them ready for salt water. Which is preliminary shown some really good results, and we're going to expand on that this year. And we've been providing fish for the ocean pen programs in Pillar Point, and we take some fish down to Fort Baker under the Golden Gate. There's been some really good success with the survival of those fish.
And I hear better things each year about those efforts.
Yeah, I'll take a trip down to Half Moon Bay in September when the weather's good, and you'll see there'll be, 150 trailers in the parking lot, and look right out in front of the harbor, and guys are catching, 20-pound salmon.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And these... quarter mile from the ramp, it's a wonderful program.
Bill, aren't these the fish that you take from your net pens and put directly in the net pens in salt water?
Yeah, they have a large net pen that they moor in the harbor there.
Uh-huh.
We'll truck the fish down. We'll put the fish in the net pen. They haul the net pen out and they moor it for 5 or 6 days. And then they release those fish, and then they come back in, and we'll do it again. I think last year we released 720,000 total fish there over a three-week period. And it's proven to be very successful. The folks down there are very happy.
Yeah.
The fishermen are happy, and the businesses are happy. And the commercial fishermen are happy.
Sure, sure. I guess one of your problems, the reason you do 100% net pens, is releasing fish in the McCollumy with, all the pumping that goes on. I mean, it's the same old story from even the Sacramento River. Fish have a hard time finding their way down. But, in the last few years, I noticed that I think it's Department of Water Resources. Have you worked with them about timing releases, or have you found that makes a difference? Or shutting off the cross channel, or what?
One of the struggles, or I don't know if it's a struggle, but one of the things we've been working with is the Bureau of Reclamation to get cross channel closures in the spring when we release our fish, and also in the fall time when our fish are coming back. In September, typically the McComb River might have 150, 200 CFS flowing into the Central Delta. And if the cross-channel gates are open, you might have 3,000 to 6,000 CFS flowing across from the Sacramento River directly into the North Fork of the McColony. And that's proven to be quite confusing to the returning adults.
Yeah.
And so we're working with the Bureau, the Department, and Fish and Wildlife Service and other agencies to figure out a solution to get our fish back to where they're supposed to be.
That's Bill Smith, hatchery manager for the McColony River Hatchery. And he really has pulled out all the stops to be innovative. And they're not planting any more than twice in the same spot. You know, that's going to eliminate predation, on and on and on. Anyway, we'll have more on salmon later in the program, right after the break. Stripers, don't go away. Welcome back. Welcome back. Well, our friend Mark Wilson having a few issues. He's in the hospital. He's found. It's fine. I talked to him yesterday afternoon. Sounds great. Got a little circulatory problem. And when he has time, you're a friend of his and want to give him a call in his cell, he will definitely love to hear from you. In the meantime, he shouldn't be more than a few days there. In the meantime, our old friend Clyde, the old-timer Wands, joins us now and updates us on, hopefully, where the stripers are. Good morning, Clyde.
Good morning, Bob. I think they put on that vanishing cream the last couple of days. We had some great fishing, and I mean, when it turned off, it turned off.
Yeah.
I've been fishing the windy days. I hit the San Joaquin. Had a great day on the west bank. But you have to hit that with the incoming tide because of the grass.
Yeah.
The grass was completely gone. We had two boats in the parking lot that day, nobody around, and that was my best day for size. We caught a couple eights, and we turned a couple 12s back.
Yeah.
Nothing real big, but that's still nice fish.
Sure, you bet. You bet.
And the windy days, I've been fishing the San Joaquin when I can't get down to Broad Slough. Broad Slough's been very good when I can get down there.
Yeah, and the wind has just been keeping us out of there. So, you know, but in our area, we've had this drought now for what, a fish about 2 weeks now, the Rio Vista Decker Island area?
No, not quite that long. It slowed down a little. We had a really good day down there. I was with a friend, and of all things, he dug out a pink lure, and he was putting it to me with that goofy-colored pink lure. But then I think we caught, I don't know, maybe close to 20 that day. 2 days later, I went out, and we got 7 fish. And then it dropped down from there to 3 fish. But the last trip, well, I talked to Barry. He said, which way are you going? I said, well, I'm not getting anything here at Decker. I'm headed south. The wind was blowing, Bob. The grass was breaking off, and we couldn't troll along Broad Slough, where we usually do. So we crossed the river, went to the other side. We picked up a couple 6-pounders over there. And I think we only had a total of 3 keepers all day.
And then
we knocked it off early.
And you got beat to death for your efforts, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
And the thing is, if I'm running the boat, I can't let go of that wheel.
Yeah.
The guy behind is playing the fish and everything. But,
okay. Well, Clyde, you know, it's just one of those things. We're just going to have to wait. I know you're out there exploring. So I tell you what, why don't you plan on being on next week and give us an update on where you've been? How's that?
Okay.
Thanks.
I will be out there next week a couple times.
Thanks, Clyde.
Okay, you bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Clyde Wands, the old-timer. He just loves to fish, and he gets flat after it. Well, a second part of our salmon thing, Mike McHenry is a 57-year commercial fisherman for salmon and squid, even anchovies. He's donated his boat and his time to transport fish. He did a little bit on the Feather River, and now he's working with the McColony River. He's got a boat with recirculating things, so you put a bunch of fish from the hatchery in there, and they get acclimated by all the water being pumped through the boat all the way down to the bay. Anyway, I talked to him last night. Mike, it's good to have you back on the air. We did this a few years ago. And let me fill people in. For 57 years, you were a commercial fisherman on the whole coast, west coast of the U.S., salmon, squid, even anchovies in the bay, the whole works. And then you decided to volunteer your efforts, and I use that word strongly, volunteer your efforts on the boat. And you did an experiment with salmon from the Feather River Hatchery where you picked them up at the I-5 bridge 1 year, and I think the Delta King another year, and then down below another year. And you had good initial indications that the fish came back in good numbers. Then you kind of switched it over to the McCallamy, and you've been working on that for a couple of years. Now, where do you pick up those fish from the McCallamy Hatchery?
Okay, Bob. Yeah, Bill Smith was on the boat during the first 3 years. And
that's the hatchery manager? Mm-hmm.
And he said, boy, he would really like to do an experiment out of his hatchery down there on the McCallamy. So we said, you know what, you're very sincere. And we says, okay, Bill, I'll do it. So we made the arrangements, and when we finished our third year up from the Rio Vista on the Feather River, we turned around with the boat and went all the way back up the McCallamy River, and Bill escorted me with a friend of his to make sure the river is quite shallow in spots.
Sure.
And I have a 9-foot draft boat, and I didn't want to spend the summer laid over on my side in the river. So it was dicey, very exciting. Well, we made it up there. They found a channel to get up there, and we, right at Juicy's, it's at the Miller Ferry Bridge.
Yeah.
We tied up just on the west side of it. There was a farmer there that was very, very nice. He had a personal float. Bill talked to him. He delivered 100,000 fish, put them into our boat, every one spanking beautiful, alive.
Yeah.
Gorgeous fish. They let 100,000 go with different tags right next to our boat to see how they did versus our fish, and they took 100,000 down to Tiburon by Fort Baker, and we put those on top of our 100,000 when we got down there 2 days later and went out under the Golden Gate on an outgoing tide just about dark for the bird predation and let them go.
Great planning.
Yeah. No, because the birds whack them. And, of course, very limited striper predation, because there you are at the gate, and once they go to sea, the stripers are mainly in shore, so we don't have to go after the sports guys and cry striper and predation. It's a win-win. It's a win-win deal. So you get the sports guys on our side.
So you take the fish from Juicy's all the way down the McCallamy, then back out to where the San Joaquin and the Sacramento, and all the way down to Sassoon, San Pablo, and San Francisco Bays, and then release them outside the Golden Gate.
Yep, and we anchor one night at Benicia to acclimate them. The water is getting brackish there.
Yeah,
spend the night, and then the next day we go on down. Pick up the fish the first year at Tiburon and out under the Golden Gate that evening and released them. And it was really, we're getting some results back now, which are quite favorable. We're all excited about to get the next 2 years' results.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little indicator that your efforts might be paying off. And in this day and age with the salmon, I mean, what the heck? We got to try something. That's a great idea.
No, and I'm also a rice farmer, and it would. So I know I wear both hats, and I realize the problem here, and I'm trying to find solutions thinking outside the box, where we can have our water for the beautiful ag in California and have our salmon, and we all get together and put our think caps on, and this made the most sense to us. I had the boat. I volunteered it. My son and the crew, they all jumped in and did it. And here we are today, holding our breath, but like you say, the indicators are quite good.
Well, isn't that creative? I mean, I just think that's a great plan. I mean, that may not be the only way to do it, but they're trying it, and they're putting other fish. They're comparing, you know, the fish taken down in his boat, the fish they put in the system right next to his boat, and then the fish they haul down to Tiburon and let go on top of his fish. So they can compare apples to apples, okay, on three different sets of fish with different tags or whatever they have in the, you know, either fin clips or little electronic things in the head. Let's hope it worked. We'll know more after this salmon run on the McCollumy, but he and Bill Smith are working together, and I just think it's great. Of course, all this is because of too much pumping. After the break, we're going to have a little update on the Feather River salmon. Don't go away. Welcome back. Welcome back. By the way, I want to remind you, at Rahaga's, there is a one-day rattlesnake avoidance class on September 30th. Just one day. That's a Saturday. So call Rahaga's, 530-724-0552. Only takes about 10 minutes for your dog. Let's check with Rob Reimers, fishing the Feather River. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, you just sent me a picture of a pretty nice salmon. What took you so long?
Yeah, well, we had a couple slaps first, and they didn't hook up, and then we got that guy on. Man, he was hot, too. He was fighting up, go running all over the place. We had to throw the anchor, go down after him, and he was getting a little air and everything else, man.
Well, I know you've got my old friend Marion Shargan on board, formerly of Shargan's Bar and Grill, and you sent me a picture of two of his grandkids, and they look pretty doggone happy.
Yeah, Mikey, little Mikey, he's pretty happy right now. He fought that fish pretty hard.
Yeah. Is Marion awake?
Yeah. He just took a big swig of coffee. That's keeping him going.
So what's it look like out there? You got a lot of company out there, Rob?
We have a lot of company. We got, once we landed that fish, we got more company all of a sudden.
It's amazing. They could be all over the river, but somebody, I got to get over where that guy is, right?
Yeah, yeah. I got guys on both sides of me now.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. You usually pick a pretty good slot that the fish come up, so.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that fish on, the flatfish?
Yeah, I got it on a Brad's Killer Fish, the dragonfly pattern.
Okay, okay.
Wrapped with a sardine with a little anise on there and bloody tuna kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. By the way, what are the grandkids' names there?
One of them is Mikey, and the other one's Vincent. Okay. But they keep swapping their names on me on purpose to keep me tripped up. They go, no, I'm not Mikey, I'm Vincent.
Well, what the heck? I mean, you like taking kids out anyway, huh?
Yeah, ain't no fun if they'll pick on me a little bit.
So, are you going to eventually go to row before the day's over? You're going to stick with the lures?
We may. It's been a pretty good lure bite from talking to some of the guys this morning, so we may just stick with the lures. But we may, a little later on today, go down the runways or something and try some different spots and do a little back trolling.
Yeah.
But right now, we're just sitting on an anchor. Seems to be all we need to do.
Well, I mean, if you can get two or three fish, then it's always fun. I know I've always enjoyed it, you know, to do different things.
Right.
Yeah, and see how this technique works and go down through a little white water and have some fun.
Yeah.
So does that not sound like a good idea to you?
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you're looking at something intensely.
Well, right when you were saying something there, a guy next to me hollered, and I looked over. I thought maybe he had a fish on, which we'd have to reel up because we're fishing pretty tight here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's nice to be courteous, huh?
Yeah. Well, hopefully do the same for us, and we'll do it for them.
Okay. Well, good luck, and if you get anything more before the end of the program, text me, okay?
All righty.
Okay, see you later.
All right, bye. All right.
I could tell he had his hands full. I think he's got Marion, somebody else, and a couple of grandkids. So, Rob Reiners, you want to book a trip? 530-632-0051. Next hour, we're going to start off with the last segment of our salmon kind of information today with John McManus, who's executive director of Golden Gate Salmon Association. And, you know, John's faced with the whole organization is based on the premise of working with agencies, just not criticizing them. But in lieu of one agency in particular, the Bureau of Reclamation, it's almost impossible. These are the Bureau of Reclamation is a salmon fisherman's worst enemy. And unless they change their ways, you're going to be hearing more about them. And now we're going to start naming names and individuals that are making these decisions that are putting a little extra water for farmers ahead of actually saving the very existence of the salmon. I mean, a lot of people are fed up with it. I'm fed up with it. I hope you're fed up with it, too. Anyway, that's what we'll lead off with next hour. Don't go away. Welcome back to the third hour of the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims, Saturdays 5 to 8, right here on KFPK, 1530 AM, and also on 93.1 FM. Just booming through the hills. Okay, we have heard from Bill Smith, hatchery manager on the McCollumy River. We've heard from Mike McHenry, who donates his time and his boat to transport baby salmon down to the Golden Gate to see if that helps imprint them so they return to the same watershed. Now we're going to hear from John McManus, executive director of the Golden Gate Salmon Association. He put out a release this week, and it seems no matter what we do, we just can't get all the agencies and government on board to save the salmon. But anyway, here's that conversation. John, we had a couple of good interviews already this program, one with Bill Smith, the hatchery manager on the McCollumy River hatchery, and the efforts he's going to you know, try to get a few extra salmon out of the system, and Mike McHenry, who donates his boat and his time in a relatively new project of trying to barge the fish down where they constantly have a water flow going through the tanks are in, which can only help to some extent the acclimation process. And, of course, we just got a release from your office about the concerns you have with various factors. We are doing everything we can to fight for the salmon's survival, but sometimes I feel we're a small group marooned on an island, John.
Yep, sometimes I feel that way too. The release that we put out this week had to do with return of adult winter run to the upper Sacramento River. The winter run salmon are listed as endangered under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Only 1,123 was the estimate they had on returns. It was the second lowest in modern counting since 2011 when 824 came back. But basically what we're seeing is these are adults that were born during the drought, the worst of the drought. Most of their brothers and sisters and cousins all died before they even hatched because the river got too hot. Back in 2014 and 2015, GGSA and other groups were pleading and begging with the Bureau of Reclamation to leave enough cold water to not decimate the salmon runs, but our pleas largely fell on deaf ears, and we're getting the comeuppance with the report this summer that only 1,123 winter run returned.
Well, you know, I don't want to make this interview about criticizing a certain entity, but it seems like we always get back to the Bureau of Reclamation. I mean, I can't help but bring it up because for a year, I mean, I grew up on the American River, and for years and years and years, we see the salmon spawning and go over the next day and there's no water. And that's been an ongoing practice in the American and the Sacramento River since that time. It's a wonder we have any salmon. Of course, what they did to the winter run, the same mistake 2 years in a row. It seems like they're above the law. I mean, am I exaggerating here? But what do you think?
Just for your listeners, the Bureau of Reclamation is the federal water agency that owns and operates the dams on the American River and the Sacramento. That's Nimbus Dam and Shasta Dam. You know, I will say this, Bob. They've got an opportunity to redeem themselves after the debacle of 2014 and 2015 when they wiped out most of not only the winter run but the fall run,
sure,
which we all rely on to fish.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the National Marine Fisheries Service went to them and said, obviously, our temperature requirements on the upper Sacramento are not strict enough. We better improve them. That negotiation is happening right now as we speak. And the National Marine Fisheries Service is having a heck of a time getting an agreement from the Bureau of Reclamation to stiffen up the temperature requirements to leave colder water in the river, which is what the salmon need.
But that,
so
doesn't the Bureau
actually want to look in the mirror and see they did something not so great in 2014 and 2015 and do something to make up for it? They would work with the National Marine Fisheries Service right now to improve that temperature requirement so more cold water is available. They'd also address the problems that you're outlining over on the American River, where releases go from, you know, a million gallons a second down to zero. I'm exaggerating somewhat,
yeah,
but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And that's not friendly to salmon nests that are buried in the gravel in the river. They go from being under a foot and a half of water to being completely dry, which kills the eggs.
Well, it seems like they're just above the law. And I don't understand why some of our congressional representatives haven't done anything about it. But I guess they do what they do best, and that's nothing at all. It just seems like the Bureau is its own little government that does what it damn well pleases. I don't mean to be just critical and make fun of them, but I'm sorry. That's the way it seems like it to me. No, they're not accountable for anything they do.
You know, we're talking about violations of the Endangered Species Act, and the way that law is written, it basically requires enforcement, and it's rare that you'll see state or federal agencies try and bring a lawsuit against an entity like the Bureau. More often you see nonprofit groups like Earth Justice and the Natural Resources Defense Council with clients like us and others who will go into court and challenge some of these actions that the Bureau is doing. That's actually occurring right now. So we'll see what happens. But it takes basically citizen groups to go to court and seek enforcement before we get any positive change.
John McManus, Executive Director of Golden Gate Salmon Association. So now the National Marine Fisheries Service got involved and is negotiating with the Bureau of Reclamation, and they're getting resistance from the Bureau of Reclamation. Now, the Bureau of Reclamation did such a poor job of considering fish and other things in their project plan that in the early 1990s, we passed the Central Valley Water Project Improvement Act, which made fish and wildlife a purpose of the Bureau. They were also ordered to double the existing salmon runs. You know what they've done about all that? Nothing. You know what protections they've given salmon? None. They continue to operate like the Bureau of old, and they're killing tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of salmon. They kill not only winter run salmon, they kill all salmon. Every type of salmon that spawns in the river when they are not responsible enough to keep cool water pools in reservoirs like Shasta and Folsom, because they have a water contract with Delta farmers, or put it this way, Westland Water District Farmers, which is a very powerful political organization. So the politics are killing the fish, and nobody's doing anything about it. Of course, I think of Tom McClitic and Doug LaMalfa. You know, I think these two guys, you know, could really do something about it. My guess is they don't even know anything about it. So there you have the state of the salmon right now. If something isn't done with the Bureau, they single-handedly could wipe out most of the salmon in the Central Valley. Sad but true. Okay. We'll pick it up on the positive side right after this break. and give you a story about some pretty good salmon fishing. How's that for a switcheroo?
News. The military will get the money.
Traffic.
We have a semi over on the shoulder.
And weather.
Plenty of sunshine this afternoon.
The KFBK Morning News with Amy Lewis and Dan Mitchinson. The
creation of an office.
Monday morning beginning at 5.
Real-time numbers.
News Radio. KFBK.
KFBK.
93.1 FM. And 1530 AM.
Is water backing up into your toilet, bathtub, shower, washing machine? Are your drains suddenly slow? Does your kitchen sink have a foul smell coming out of it? These are telling signs that you may have a clogged main line. I'm Todd Bird.
And I'm Tim Lance, here from the KFBK Home Show. And this Sunday, Todd and I are going to be talking about clogged drains with our exclusive partners, the Bell Brothers. So much to go over. For example, what exactly happens during the drain clear?
That's right. They'll be sharing a lot of good info, including preventative measures homeowners can take now to avoid having to make emergency calls later.
Tune in this Sunday at 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. as Todd and I talk with our trusted plumbing partners, Bell Brothers Plumbing, Heating, and Air.
For special discounts from the Bell Brothers on window replacement, AC tune-ups, tankless water heaters, and more, be sure to go to the nosurpriseguys.com/KFBK.
Again, that's nosurpriseguys.com/KFBK.
License number 726129.
Hello, Sacramento. We're Eyeglass World. And if you enjoy spending way too much money or settling for substandard service, we are not the eyewear store for you. But if you like getting your glasses the same day, getting two pairs for just $78, and through our limited time grand opening offer, having us pay for your eye exam, a $58 value, well then, we'll see you soon. Eyeglass World. See yourself smile, see yourself save. Visit eyeglassworld.com for store locations and offer details.
At European Sleep Design, we do everything for a reason. We try to find solutions to common problems. Hi, I'm Jill. In our research on sleep disturbance, one problem that kept surfacing was the sleeping warm syndrome. Maybe it's happened to you. You're all tucked in, you fall asleep, but in the middle of the night, you suddenly wake up. The sheets are damp, your heart is racing, and you're uncomfortably hot. That's the problem when body heat and moisture become trapped in non-breathable mattresses and covers. Over time, heat and humidity build up. Your blood pressure and heart rate increase, and your sleep is broken. To help solve this problem, we make sure air can circulate in the European Sleep Design mattress, evaporating moisture quickly. You'll still give off body heat and perspiration at night, but at least your mattress won't be saving it up for you. Not if it's a mattress from European Sleep Design. On Folsom Auburn Road at Greenback in Folsom, and online at sleepdesign.com.
Well, over half the year's gone, and one thing seems to be clear. Mortgage rates will likely be going up from here. I'm Tom Sullivan for my friends at the Absolute VA Jumbo and Conventional Loan Experts, Sierra View Financial. Do you have a second mortgage or an adjustable equity line of credit? The time is now to make the five-minute call to see if Sierra View can combine your loans into one low fixed-rate loan. And veterans, did you know VA purchases can be done? No down payment, no closing costs, literally zero out-of-pocket, and 100% financing. VA loans have no minimum. You can finance up to $2 million. But right now, I urge you to protect your hard-earned money against the potential of rising rates. Give Sierra View Financial a call. Folks, they really do make this process simple. 916-989-6222. 989-6222. 916-989-6222.
California Bureau of Real Estate, real estate broker license number 01275449, NMLS number 280404, equal housing lender.
Our sold out 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival hosted by Ryan Seacrest.
iHeartRadio.
Two nights, one stage.
Let's go!
This weekend at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas.
Watch it live on CWTV.com or the CW app, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. And for the first time ever, watch our Daytime Village, 11 a.m. Saturday.
Capital One is the proud marquee partner of the iHeartRadio Music Festival. For more information on Capital One products and services, please visit CapitalOne.com today.
Shrew, a Jazz Age musical romp. Tonight, 8 p.m. at the Fair Oaks Theater Festival.
Last week, we talked to Kurt Portocarrero up at Sac River Guide, and while he was catching some fish, you could just, I explained after the interview how he beats himself up because he's just not catching the fish like he used to. Well, you can still have good days, even though the salmon aren't as numerous, but they're nothing like they're used to. Usually, this time of year up in the Sacramento River, everybody you talk to limits out with nice, bright fish, and It just hasn't been the case. While they have been getting quite a few fish, it's just not like it was. There's fewer salmon. That's all there is to it. But he's still having a pretty good week. I talked to him last night. Kirk, looks like a pretty good week on Sacramento River. The pictures you've been texting me, some pretty doggone nice fish and good good numbers. But didn't you run into a thunderstorm earlier this week?
Yeah, we ended up with one on, I think it was Monday. It was it came down pretty hard and heavy. We didn't get our first fish till 10 o'clock, but we were soaking wet for the first 2 hours, 3 hours. Boy, I tell you what, when that sun came up, we were like lizards laying in the sun. We took our jackets off, and boy, then the fish started hitting, and then everybody forgot about being wet.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happens.
No, man, they just hit it all. I knew when it was pouring down rain like that, you wouldn't do any good. As soon as that rain let off and that sun came up, and that the water was warm already, because you get on a rainy day, you get warm weather anyway.
Yeah,
warm water. But when that water warms up and that sun came up, those fish hit good. We ended up getting our fish on that day. We've been getting good fish all week. It's been really good. Probably the best week. I would say this is the best week we've had so far.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And where are you fishing specifically?
I'm fishing the canyon from Red Bluff all the way up to Anderson.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a few fish today down out of Benbridge. We went all the way down to Benbridge and picked up a couple fish down there and made it all the way back, and got a few down out of the Old Mouth and some out of Balls Ferry there, the Battle Creek area.
Any fish at Lava Rock Hole?
No, I never gave Lava Rock a hole, but I got a couple out of the Payne's Creek, not Payne's Creek, but I apologize, Ings Creek hole there. We got a few out of there.
The reason I always ask about Lava Rock Hole is, first of all, it's such a beautiful, nice, deep run in there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of easy to fish. But it seems like every time I was ever there, I would see a roadrunner.
Oh, yeah, they're all over there. They're beautiful. You see them in those canyons, those gorgeous draws. It looks like almost it's like a cross between Arizona and New Mexico in there. You wouldn't even think you were in California if you got in that gorge.
It's a little postage stamp of like it doesn't belong there, right?
Yep, it's beautiful. Very, very gorgeous.
Yeah. So has it been a flatfish in the morning and row in the afternoon?
Yep, exactly. Yep, okay. Flatfish in the morning. I ran flatfish all day today and yesterday. Justin ran row today and yesterday. He got all his fish on row. I got my fish on flatfish.
Okay.
So they're hitting on both. And like I said, this has been the best week I've seen. We've got some good numbers. It just, once that weather stabilizes, we do a lot better. Of course, when you have barometer changes with rain and clouds and wind, everything gets tough. But for the most part, I saw probably the first hour this morning, I probably saw 75 fish jump. And that's the most I've seen all season.
Wow. They're still coming in.
And 50% of them are real, they cut real red, and a few of them are a little darker. But they're not, we're at September 15th. We're still at that time of the year where we're going to get fresh fish.
Yeah.
Right? It's straight up.
We got some ways ahead of it. I know this sounds funny in the middle of talking about salmon fishing when it's so good, but last week you said you were going to go to Shasta. Did you do that?
Oh, yeah. I think we went there on Tuesday or Wednesday, the day after that storm, we went there, and it was great. It was phenomenal. Great fishing. I'm very surprised that Shasta on the middle of September is still great trout fishing. Big trout. Down deep, 100 feet, we fished from Packers Bay to the dam and back, and we landed 23 fish and kept 16, and it was a great, great day. Big fish, too. I mean, a lot of 20-inch fish.
Sounds like they're spread out a little bit now.
No, we just kind of moved around that way. I just kind of turned it autopilot and go one direction to one direction, and you kind of work that way, make a straight line, and just start heading that direction. There's fish all throughout there, yeah. It's just been a great year, phenomenal year on Shasta. I've never seen it go this long, actually.
No.
You always think the lake turns over. Once the lake turns over, it kind of goes dead. But, I got another few more trips there, and I would say it's going to be like this probably till the first of the month.
Well, I mean, and it was like this last year, and it's just a big mystery, all these big trout. Are they still up like 18, 20, 22 inches?
Yep. That's the average size. 18 to 22 inches is average size, and that's amazing to get that big a trout. You almost feel bad, you know, about keeping them, but there's bigger ones than that out there still.
Yeah. Are you still using a Dodger and some sort of a shad imitation?
Yeah, like any shad tad? Any shad pattern imitation, an inch and a half to 2 inches long is the ticket. There are still full of shad. There's shad just thick out there. Everywhere you go, there's big shad balls.
That's Kurt Portocarrero up at Sack River Guide. He's having a good time right now. A lot of people want to go catch those big trout. Others, the salmon is king. Anyway, Kurt's number, 800-670-4448, or you can go to his website, sackriverguide.com. Well, earlier in the week, I was ready to go up in the mountains to both the East Carson and the West Walker. Thunderstorms blew them both out. In fact, boy, I'll tell you one thing. Tim Fesco, who we'll hear about in about a half an hour from now, sent me a little video of rain. I couldn't believe it. Over on the east side by Colville. I mean, it was like flooding. He said he's never seen rain like that. But anyway, I talked to Todd Sodero at Creekside Lodge in Markleyville about what the status is now. Well, Todd, early in the week, I was ready to come up and do some fishing, and I saw all those weather patterns and called you, and the East Carson was mud. And I thought, what kind of a year is it? We have high water all the way through August, then we have thunderstorms, and if somebody doesn't want us to fish there, and the river's just full of fish. So what happened? Did it clear up?
It is clear. It's back to the green tint now. It got muddy on Tuesday. Last night it started clearing good, and looked at it 15 minutes ago. It's got a good green tint to it.
Beautiful, beautiful. I know you made a plant this week. Did you heavy up on the West Fork because of those conditions?
Yeah, I did. I brought fish in midweek, and that East Carson was too muddy, so we planted every fish 1,800-pound truckload on the West Carson.
And those were some big fish, if I recall.
You know, 50 to 60% of that load was in between 2 and 5 pounds.
Oh, my. How many different places on the West Fork?
We did 9 different locations.
Oh, that's great. Spread them out good.
Yep.
Well, now the East Fork is back in good shape. There's no shortage of fish in that river.
No. The state actually planted it the day before we got the rain and the muddiness in it.
Uh-huh. Well, those fish will probably be spread out a little bit. And the way you've been planning it, maybe the very, very, very easy to get to spots are a little short on fish, but every place in between, I'm sure, aren't.
Yeah, I sent a gentleman with his 8-year-old son up early this morning, up towards the upper bridge, 6 miles out of town. They were both throwing panther martins, and they threw back 15 fish.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there you go. And they probably had a variety of sizes to them. Did they mention what size?
You know, they were anywhere from 8 inches to about a pound and a half.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, you think we're done with the thunderstorms for a while? I mean those that are heavy enough to muddy up the rivers?
I believe so. Percentage-wise, when they were calling 80-90% for 3 days when it did rain heavy, there are 2 days next week that I saw in the weather for about a 20% chance, but that shouldn't phase the rivers.
They can handle that, okay. Yeah. And as far as Indian Creek, with the weather cooling down, we should see some more action then, but you're not planning that until toward the end of the season. Is that correct?
Actually, Indian Creek Reservoir got its whole allotment earlier in the season due to the rivers were high. I wanted to really load that up.
So it should be in good shape once the waters next to shore cool down. We should have good fish in there.
It should be spectacular.
Todd Sodero up at Creekside Lodge in Markleyville, so things are well there. His number, call him in the morning, 530-694-2511. And then, as I said, we will get a report from the West Walker, which is equally good. It may be even better, who knows. Plus, there's some other things happening there. But what we'll do here is we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Mr. Gary Coe of Kokanee Power about the Derby that he may have lucked into winning last week at Shaver Lake, the last Derby of the year, so don't go away. I want you to know that there is no way, I believe, even though it was confirmed by several witnesses, that Gary Coe was sound asleep in his boat when his partner told him he had a fish on, and he ended up winning the last Derby of the year down at Shaver Lake. I just absolutely refuse to believe that.
That would be good for you to do that, because it didn't happen.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
You get plenty of sleep last night?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Last night, but not the weekend before.
So, what a weekend. You had a heck of a fishing trip down there, the last Derby of the year for Kokanee Power, and you guys ended up winning it.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, you know, I felt pretty good, you know, when we talked last weekend.
Yeah, well, when you were on the air, I figured the fish you had there were pretty close to being unbeatable.
It was, and we bettered it. It took another, I don't know, 4 hours, and we finally did better it with another big male by a little bit. And as it turned out, that was the little bit we needed. We won the thing by 0.9 of an ounce.
0.9 of an ounce?
For the three fish total. Our three fish weighed 5 pounds, 6 ounces. And second place was 5 pounds, 5.1 ounces.
You just never know on these things, do you?
Needed that last fish. And then to top it all off, you know how we run side pots.
Yeah.
Well, that last fish came at 65 feet. We were 35 feet shallower than we had been fishing and picked up that last fish.
You mean deeper?
Shallower.
Oh, shallower.
Yeah. In the middle of the day, we came up 35 feet, thought we might try to catch a trout for the trout side pot that we had opted to go into. So we picked up that last big kokanee, and I told John, I said, put it back down 10 feet deeper, and let's go by this big rock wall that, you know, that people stay away from because it's pretty darn easy to get snagged. And I thought, well, what? We're almost done.
Yeah.
If we get snagged. So we went down 75 feet and went over the top of that rock wall, bouncing off of it a little bit and off one side of it, and got a hit. It was on John's rod. Started to fight. And I go, here's another big kokanee. Why haven't we been doing this? And it was a little over 1.5 pounds holdover rainbow, just a beautiful fish. And we won the rainbow trout side pot.
With that pound and a half fish?
Yes.
I'll be doggone.
There weren't any fish, very few trout caught, so it was just enough. So it was a nice way to end the season.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, we have to remember that I don't know what the magic is to have kokanee weighing almost 2 pounds apiece in a lake that they had to drain 2 years ago to fix the dam.
It's just extraordinary. There's another strain of fish in there, and the ones that we kept for table fare, they're great table fare because that's a cool, you know, upper elevation cold water lake. And they're 13, 14 inches long, and they're, you know, they're anywhere from 16 to 18 to 20 ounces. And then there are these big guys sitting down on the bottom that are 18, 19, nearing 2 pounds. A totally different strain of fish, and at least another month closer to maturity.
Yeah.
You know, so we just
There's got to be something when you drain that lake and all that vegetation grows, and then you flood the lake, and a whole different ecosystem, a rich ecosystem, is created at least for a couple of years. And I think that's the only thing I can figure out that happened there.
You're absolutely right, and just a lot of food too. You know, with the ecosystem, which it just flourishes, you know, with the new water and the flush out And I just hope that the Department of Fish and Wildlife doesn't overdo it and put too many fish back in there, because the way to maintain what's going on now, I think, is to taper off a little bit.
Well, the way they've been maintaining their kokanee program the last few years, I wouldn't count on too much. But anyway, so we'll get into, I know you're dropping a couple of derbies next year.
Yeah.
Speaking of situations, mainly because there was no fish, and then because there's no fish, there's not much interest. And what were they, Don Pedro, and what?
We're dropping down to 6, and on the plus side, we are picking up a second 2-day event, and we're just trying to think ahead and some things that we want to do as soon as we can. As soon as we feel comfortable and moving back into Maloney's, we want to go back down there. Everybody enjoys the heck out of that event. And then next year, we will pull away from, due to the lack of fishery this year, we just want to give it a year to rest and make sure it grows back properly, Don Pedro.
will be pulling out of there for a year. Just leave it alone, let it sit.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing up at Bucks Lake. While it's a great place to have an event, there just aren't the number of quality fish up there.
Well, there's plenty of fish, but the quality is the key there.
Yeah, the small fish. And the people aren't interested in driving that.
But that's always been the case at Bucks Lake. Once in a while, you get an average of 13 to 14 inches, and you're doing good there.
Well, that was this year.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we would have done much better had that big slide not occurred down the river, down the canyon. You couldn't get there.
You had to go up through Quincy.
Yeah. Go up through Quincy and turn around and come back. You know, so it was quite a drive for people. And
yeah.
And the road is not supposed to be done next year until the end of 2018. So we decided to let that rest for a year as well.
Mm.
And we still have six. We're not abandoning our membership or the people that like the kokanee fish.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's why we exist.
And then you're going to have a two-day where?
Whiskey Town.
Oh, okay. The new hot lake.
Yeah. We're going to go back. And it's going to be, I'll give you the date. It's June 9th. June 9th to 10th.
Okay.
We're moving it back earlier into the year. The fish might be a little smaller. They certainly will be of equal quality or better. And we've got a good chance of it being 15 or 20 degrees cooler.
Yeah. Well, and plus there's one thing about that. Just a few miles outside of Redding, you got plenty of lodging and restaurants, the whole works.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Real quick, you got any report on Whiskey Town, by the way?
I have a report on Whiskey Town, and I have a darn good report on Shasta, if we have time.
Well, I already got a report on Shasta with the trout.
Yep.
Yeah, we did that. The big rainbow's down 900 feet.
It's still happening.
It's still happening.
And it's happening way up the Sacramento arm.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. They're kind of spreading out a little bit.
Yeah. Here's the scoop on Whiskey Town, and I don't know whether... I've got to go up and find out myself. I plan on going up in the next few days. But I'm hearing that the bite has drastically slowed down. The fish are maturing rapidly. You know, it's typically one of the lakes that we slide up to quietly mm-hmm. in October and fish because of the late strain of fish that's in there. But I understand there are a lot of fish turning. And some people saying it's, you know, that it's basically over with.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to it. I just...
So you're going to go up and find out one way or the other.
Yeah, got to do it.
Okay. We're out of time, Gary. Thanks so much, and congratulations for winning the final derby.
It was almost a dry year.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you later.
Have a great day.
Gary Coe, president of Kokanee Power. When we get back, a report on the fishing on the West Walker, plus some other events coming up over there. Don't go away. By the way, Barry Canavero called a while ago and said he's salmon fishing down near Isleton. Water temperature is 68.8 degrees. Then he just called again a couple seconds ago. They just put a 17 or 18 pound nice bright salmon in the boat. So how about that? The temperature drops 1 degree and he catches a salmon. Anyway. I talked to Tim Fesco at Meadowcliff Lodge and RV over in Colville on Highway 395 on the banks of the West Carson about the fishing. Tim, I called to get a fishing report earlier in the week, and you sent me a video on text of, I think, some of the hardest rain I've ever seen. It muddied up the West Walker. Did that clear up yet?
Yeah, it has. You know, 20 years here, I've never seen it rain like that. We've had rains, but nothing quite like that one. So, but the river's clear. I went and checked it this afternoon just to make sure, and everything's going great. I've got some anglers up here right now, and they're knocking them dead.
Happy, huh?
Well, they're very happy.
Once that river came down, and we don't get bothered by thunderstorms, everybody's catching fish up there.
Yeah, you know, if you're not catching fish, I think you don't have a hook on the end of your
Yeah. That's a very polite way to put it, Tim. So the whole river, usually by this time of year, the river in front of your place, it slows down because it warms up and drops a little bit, but that's still going?
That's still going. I had some fly fishermen in three days ago, and they went down to the Larson Bridge, and they were catching some nice ones, actually. Reports of some browns. Actually, even one guy got like a little 6-inch brown. So we know they're spawning.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not many browns. You hate, one guy caught one. I remember the story because, you know, you and I were talking and that he kept it. And we were talking about maybe it was a fish of a lifetime. And I went over to Pam Hammack's place in back of her motel and she called over the guy. And what did he say? It was the fish of a lifetime. So
I know you. You know, but that still makes me just sad. My whole thing with any fish up here, unless you're really going to eat it, is catch and release. They only get bigger.
Yeah, well,
and with
well,
the browns up here, I just that is just catch and release, period.
If the people could fish there now and they want fishing like that in the future, you just release a few more fish, and it's going to get closer to that. So a variety of things. Obviously, bait's going to work, and lures are going to work, and flies are going to work, and clear on up to Pickle Meadows. I know. You guys have been you planted some big fish, was it this week or last week? Last week?
Last week.
Yeah, last week, and the department plants it every week, so you're in good shape, and the beautiful fall colors are coming up. But listen, in a couple of weeks, you've got a big off-road jamboree coming up you've been doing every year. It used to be in June, now it's in September.
Yeah, that's actually September 26th through the 30th. ATVs and UTVs, so side-by-side, uh-huh. Like razors or so forth.
Yeah.
That's coming up. This is our 10th anniversary. This is our 10th year of doing this. First time in September. I've had to move that because of some U.S. Forest Service changes, but we're looking forward to it.
Well, tell me just briefly, give me an idea of the itinerary there.
Yeah, so it starts off Tuesday with registration, and then it follows up with 4 days of guided trail rides. We still have openings. You get breakfast every morning, but this is a full breakfast. This is not this little continental breakfast with a, you know, with a bagel.
Yeah, full breakfast. Okay.
You know, full breakfast, and then ends up Saturday with a dinner and raffle prizes. And I've got thousands of dollars worth of raffle prizes this year.
That's great. Now listen, you come back to the hotel each day.
Each day, okay. Right. It is day trip, so take off in the morning, go out for your ride, come back. We do have, if you stay here with us at Meadow Cliff and the KOA, we do Thursday night, we do our own barbecue that's available to our guests. Friday okay. night is the fundraiser for the Antelope Valley Fire Department, dinner dance, and then Saturday, of course, is the big dinner and raffle. Hey, we've got something going on. If you don't get tired from riding, you'll get tired from everything else.
Okay, so this is all a group effort where you go out in groups then, huh?
You do go out in groups. It is guided trail rides, so we have a head guide and a tail guide, and everybody goes off. And I'll tell you, I was out just the other day, yesterday actually, flowers are still out at 9,000 feet. I cannot believe it.
My goodness gracious. My goodness. Okay, now what's that cost, by the way, to register for the 4 days?
It's $160 per person, and that includes everything.
Except your room.
Except your lodging, of course.
Yeah, okay. But that includes food.
That includes the food during the jamboree. That includes T-shirts, raffle prize entry, all kinds of stuff.
That's a great deal. And you go to EasternSierraJamboree.com to register?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
You can register
now, hey, one, I know this, we're supposed to talk about fish, but next week there's a big kite thing going on up there. And I heard that somebody was going to demo a 90-foot kite.
Yeah, we've got the 23rd and the 24th, I think it is, 24th.
Yeah,
yeah. 23rd and 24th. Saturday, Sunday is our second annual kite festival, and these are big, big kites. I stood under one last year as they were bringing it in, and you don't quite understand how big they are until they get down to the ground.
It's Tim Fesco. Lots going on over on the east side. His number, 530-495-2255, and again, the entry for that ATV Jamboree is EasternSierraJamboree.com. Have a good week, everyone.